company. That's my challenge to keep you alert and engaged for the next 30 minutes while waiting for the star act of the day here. But I'm going to be talking a bit about how government procurement can support open. And there's a few dots after open, because if you look at the way that different governments around the world are espousing open, it's open data, it's open standards, it's open source. So I'm going to spend today a bit of time running through the non-open source activities, and then what I'm hoping to do is to get a little bit of a discussion going on what we need to do in New Zealand to get open source more heavily adopted or actively used by government agencies. And I think that's picking up on some of the discussion that was happening with the crew, the team just beforehand with Stephen's session. So just starting off from Gabriella's talk this morning, and also Don's introduction, open isn't a product, it's actually a value. It's a way of thinking about what governments do. And I guess our history in some totalitarian regimes is very closed. Stasi springs to mind as an organization that sort of redefined the opposite of open. So it is more than just products and services. It is a way of thinking about the operations of government and the values that then flow through. And Don's been talking for quite a while about the essential freedoms that it gives you by being open. So if we think about open what? This is a lovely picture. This is free your data. Let it go. Government agencies spend far too much time hugging their data, polishing it, processing it, refining it, until it's absolutely perfectly formed within a cage and nobody else in the community or in the world has access to it. And the pressure on agencies to release that data is increasing. The expectations of connection with government information is increasing. And the pressures on government agencies, of course, are such that they're saying, we can't possibly respond to all these demands for our data. And one of the reasons for that is they're spending too much time processing raw data. And the phrase that I like to read to use is, government's got to shift from being in the business of retailing data, so taking raw data, processing it, packaging it, commenting on it, and then delivering it as a final report and in a PDF format. PDFs is where data go when they want to die. And they've got to stop doing that and actually just get the data out there, because there's a whole collection of tools and communities and people that will do things with that data once it's out there in the wild. And we have seen five good reasons why we should free the data. Firstly, we've already paid for it through our taxes in terms of collection, so it is not government data. As Colin pointed out on the radio some time ago, it's government-held data. It's held by government on our behalf. And people, if it's been collected, people should be entitled to and want to access it. Secondly, public access improves quality. The US CIO, Vivek Kundra, was hell-bent last year on putting data out into the public domain, and the government CIOs across Washington were hell-bent on preventing them. And eventually he said, and they said things like, the data isn't accurate. And he said, I'm going to publish this at the end of next month. It's going to be as accurate as it is then, and if there are mistakes, then we'll have 250 million Americans looking at them rather than two people on a part-time basis in your department. So polish it up a bit. But there's nothing like publicity to sharpen up the quality of data. It doesn't cost anything to publish data. Governments just don't have the resources or the skills to be able to do stuff with data that that the community can, and both for resource reasons and also for, I guess, policy type reasons. Like, if you're looking to understand the correlation between the quality of housing and the health outcomes in a community, then that involves taking information from the whole housing sector and the health sector and putting them together. Now, housing, you'll say, oh, that's not our job. We only do housing. That's not our job. We only do health. So actually, communities can do a whole lot better than individual government agencies looking at the massive data that's being produced. And fifthly, there's a whole opportunity to create both economic value, which means that we can create products off the back of government data, and sometimes people can sell them. So iPhone apps to run to tell you when the latest bus is coming, or whatever commercialization opportunities are out there that people can make money off government data. And also creating public value by increasing trust between government and people. How do we set it free? Well, New Zealand actually apparently took quite a world-leading stance with this framework. Keith and Anne are going to be talking about this whole open access licensing framework later on, so I won't last session of the day. So you either get open data straight after lunch or last session of the day, one of the two. So I won't talk any more about that. But one of the things I think is interesting is that earlier on in 2009, the community got irritated or impatient with the fact that government wasn't doing anything. So on the left, we have the open government data, the open data catalogue that was put up together by the community in a couple of weeks, I think back in April or May 2009. And then 6 months later, government produced its official source. And I think there's a message to us that we might want to take on to some of the later discussions, which is, how much do we want to do talking, and how much do we actually want to do things that create a response from government departments and government agencies? I'm not quite sure what's happened here. We've got an interoperability problem between our PowerPoint and OpenOffice technologies. Is it still intellectual, for those of you at the back, is it still intellectual property theft if the property isn't intellectual? This is two movie moguls in Hollywood. And we're having quite a lot of discussion on intellectual property in the community at the moment, and copyright, and my personal view is that the argument is that it's only a question of time before copyright becomes history, and it might be 50 years, but actually we're going through a transition into a new world where trying to put constraints on the way that creative content gets to individuals and consumers when it costs nothing to distribute it is actually a losing game, and trying to maintain those barricades over 20 or 30 or 50 years, they're just going to go. Rather, like, you don't see many monks writing illuminated manuscripts anymore. But in New Zealand, we've actually, again, we've taken the position, which is that government should not own the intellectual property for software that is built for government. Unless there are overpowering reasons why not, the intellectual property rights arising from ICT contracts, as a general rule, commercialization should be carried out by the commercial sector. And that follows a whole decade where government tried to make money out of commercializing its endeavors and was spectacularly unsuccessful at that. So now the policy situation is that government shouldn't be doing that. The practice is still that the government agencies still try to hold on to the intellectual property, but the policy position is clear. And the third one, so that's open data, and that's open intellectual property. The third one is open source, and I'll just give you a bit of time to read the XCD cartoon about Microsoft is coming in and scaring the living daylights out of various open source people. Interestingly, the government policy on open source in New Zealand is extremely straightforward as well. That's the policy. That's been the policy for 7 years. The policy is that open source should be afforded, firstly, encouraged to assess and choose based on cost, functionality, interoperability, and security. So, there's nothing wrong with the policy. Sorry? Yes. Yes, it does. But we had some discussions earlier about we need to sort, there was some guy talking at the back in the previous session about we need to get the policy debate sorted. The policy is clear. You need to choose the products that are best suited along a collection of parameters. And Jason mentioned also we've got open standards, which wasn't as dominant at that stage. And interestingly, if we look at the UK, in the beginning of this last year, they made quite a big fanfare of saying, we want the open source to be something that gets aggressively adopted within the UK government. And Andrew Stott, the person that was on the video conference this morning, he was the architect of all that before he moved over to be digital engagement. So that's the UK policy, issued in February 2009. And in September 2009, the general consensus from the media was that fine policy, but the operationalization of it had not taken place. So, the problem to me isn't about policy, it's about changing behaviors. And I hope some of the discussions that we're likely to see this afternoon through the various panel sessions are going to start teasing out what we need to do. I thought it might be useful here to have a bit of a round table discussion, or start a round table discussion, on what could be done to improve government procurement. But I'll just I'll preface that by just saying, giving a state of the art as to where government procurement is now. The first thing is that government procurement principles are relatively anodyne and hard to disagree with. Best value for money, open and effective competition, full and fair opportunity for domestic suppliers, improving business capability in New Zealand, recognizing our international obligations, and requiring sustainably produced goods and services wherever possible. Hard to disagree with that. Those are the principles upon which policy is procurement is supposed to take place. And last year, the government went and said, okay, businesses, you know what we're trying to do. Tell us your concerns. Some companies don't bother bidding for work. It's not worth the cost of sale. Agencies go out to market with no intention of buying anything. There's no standardized contracts, which means lawyers have to be involved the whole time, which drives up the cost of procurement. Public indemnity is expectations are unreasonable on the part of government. Questions, documentation issued by agencies is poor, inconsistent, requiring questions that really don't have much bearing to the actual decision that the agency is supposed to be making. Generally, agencies are looking to offload all the risk to the provider. Intellectual property ideas are solicited by agencies and then stockpiled rather than being used and by their rightful owners. The capability for procurement within agencies is uneven or low procurement capability. That's public service speak for rubbish. And finally, long contract periods giving nobody a chance to get in. Now those are the findings of the businesses that have been been selling to government for the last however long. And those are understood by government. And what government is wanting to do is to get better at procurement. And the four expectations of that is that it's not just about saving, it's actually about changing procurement. There will be cost savings, but also building capability, enhanced New Zealand participation, which I guess is the open source is a good opportunity for that, and then improved government's oversight and accountability. And in the technology, and government set up three or four centres of expertise, one of which is in DIA, Government Technology Services, primarily to look initially at IT equipment and multifunctional devices, i.e. hardware, which is about $400 million over 5 years that government's going to spend there, and other products and services in the future. And the quote is informed by a spend analysis. My view is that it ought to also be modified to be informed by a strategic impact analysis, but we'll have to work through that. So that's the current state at the moment. We have some principles that make sense. We know that industry, this is across the board, not just in IT, is frustrated with trying to sell to government. And we've got an organization whose job it is to build a center of expertise. So the challenge, should we choose to take it, is what messages would we send to the people who are leading procurement reform for IT in order to get them to respond to the things that we think are important? And that's our cue to have a discussion about either that topic or anything else I've said. Colin.
Yeah. If, as the criteria you put up, the best software is procured according to various criteria, how well used and how well defined are government's criteria for open standards in choosing software?
Yes. That's a good question.
It's an excellent question. I don't know whether you have the answer. I probably have my own views, but...
Yes. Not well, I would say. I mean, there is an interoperability framework which says this is the interoperability standards we want. It's quite good at the lower levels, but at the when you start moving up to data, it is it's suffering from a little bit of neglect, I would say. And I suspect some of the stuff that's going to be coming out of the UK and on linked data that we were just starting to talk about this morning will be a place where we're able to go. I think we've always been, to some extent, standard takers rather than standard creators. And so seeing the developments, whether it was Germany, as talked about earlier, or the EU, taking some of those interoperability standards and bringing them into the New Zealand government, I think is one answer. We're going to make another follow-up. Yes. So it's not a case of policy, it's a case of practice. Yeah. Jay's got the mic at the moment.
Hello. My own experience of IT management in government, which, albeit was in a different country, was one of viciously defended silos.
Yes.
And that had enormous implications for the way people spent money.
Yes.
An IT help desk would do everything possible to try to reduce its cost,
yes.
Even though if it were to increase its cost in some way, it could save tremendous costs elsewhere within the organisation. Yes. Is that the same in New Zealand, and is that a big problem?
Yes, it is the same in New Zealand. Whether it's a big problem depends on who you're asking. Probably the person who's running the help desk doesn't think it's a big problem at all. The incentives, part of this procurement reform is about consolidating and aggregating, because we know a lot of IT operations are actually scale-based, both in terms of cost and in terms of quality. But what we haven't yet, with a few notable exceptions, managed to unplug is the magic that encourages people to share services and infrastructure rather than replicating the building. And there's no clear mechanisms to do that. And I think it's going to need some form of leadership. Magic, yes. three sprinkles of magic dust.
Sorry, just going back to the earlier point about the definition, government being encouraged to adopt open source, would it not be better to take a stance like some countries have where they mandate open standards, like some countries that require government procurement to have the open document format support, for example?
Yeah. The current view on... there is a mechanism for doing that. So there is a mechanism to actually create mandatory standards. In general, the view, I think, is that procurement should, wherever possible, be technology neutral. So you shouldn't say, buy Linux. You shouldn't say, buy Microsoft. You should say, buy products that support these open interoperable standards, as opposed to going down a particular product route. The way the New Zealand government develops standards is by collective consensus. So So the intent of that is it builds commitment, because I think what we've seen from some of the material I've presented, that just issuing a fiat on its own and saying you will do this doesn't change behaviour. So you need to find a way of building that collective consensus as well. Don.
Yeah, I think actually Jim at the back of the room made an interesting point that it doesn't look like your policy was clear enough actually on the advantages of the direction you could go in. The other thing that seems to be missing from the policy and strategic debate is the engagement process. You're talking, even your terminology right now is talking about buying, Linux buying, whatever. Whereas what companies I know that would like to offer free and open source software solutions, where they miss out is that they can't mitigate their risk of engaging in procurement process through the fact that they'll get payback with license sales, which is why you get this whole idiotic sort of mixed source software type things, because people are trying to mitigate that risk of the huge procurement thing. And Simon Phipps, when he was here, was making very good points about how that engagement process can be made much more granular and much more fine, so that the government is engaging at a much earlier stage with the software and possibly even the communities, not necessarily with the vendors that might end up supporting that software. Yep. And you know, those kind of issues need to feed into policy.
Yeah, I think, I mean, it's a masterpiece really, isn't it, the policy? Passive tense.
5 minutes.
You are encouraged to assess these open source alternatives, and it is an interesting thing that government agencies struggled with when we started to get into free software. What procurement process do you have to run? I mean, not free and open source software, but just where you can sign up online for a Gmail account or a Facebook or a Twitter. I mean, how do you go about deciding to do that when normally your whole mechanism is around, this is what I want, now give me two or three proposals as to how I have to get this and how much money I'm going to pay. If one of those has got zero price associated with it, then the vendor isn't going to spend a lot of time trying to sell to you. You actually have to go out and buy. There's the next one here.
On your list earlier, in the list of criteria, it mentioned treaties.
Yeah.
And what is your strategy or our strategy for dealing with the government signing treaties or negotiating them out of the public eye, first of all, and then as a result of signing those treaties, for example, putting monitoring software in every single ISP and every single telephone company, or shutting down your internet or whatever.
Yeah.
So it seems to me that that's kind of an overriding concern or a way for the government to bypass just about anything else by saying we have to honor these treaties that we signed in secret.
Yes, the specific treaties that was referring to was New Zealand has free trade purchasing treaties with a number of countries, which says if we are going out to get a government contract, then we have to give equal access to New Zealand, Singapore, Chile, and Australian companies. And who? And Brunei. So that's five now. And so the government respects those treaties. I mean, it's interestingly in Australia, I understand the way they operate is that's a federal government treaty, but it doesn't necessarily apply to states, so states don't have to go through exactly the same bureaucracy. Steve?
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Very quickly, the comments about procurement and what the sellers had, that's sort of deja vu. I used to work in the New South Wales government 20 years ago. Yeah. We're trying to change those sorts of things.
Yeah.
The second thing is risk is a way to get at the senior managers. They're generally very risk averse. Showing them the risks that sit on things is probably the easiest way for the community to sell or market things to them and change ideas.
Yeah. Yes. Pierre, sorry, I'll go back to you in a minute. Pierre first. Yeah, you.
that's kind of the point I wanted to make, was that, well, almost the opposite, but when a government department, I work for Plant and Food Research, when a decision is made that they need a particular kind of software, they need to look at open source in a different way to what they look at the proprietary stuff, just so that you can say that they are properly assessing it. You're not going to have salespeople coming in trying to flog the software to you. So it has to be assessed differently.
Yeah.
And that is kind of the point. They're not going to have these Microsoft shills and things coming in and telling them how wonderful and safe they're going to be if they use whoever. Open source, it's not going to happen. They need to assess the open source software differently so that open source is then built to the same extent. If you know what I mean.
That's
non-technical people making technical decisions irritate the hell out of me as well. Yeah, but they should be at least hiring people that do or something, but they're not. Yeah.
We've got one more about the back, and then we're going to have to wrap up.
The problem is not the software, it's not the technology. The problem is reforming the way that the government works in New Zealand, because it's so structured into silos that you can't help but have silo-based decisions. And without the change to bringing centralization back more to government, it is not going to change. And it's not to do with whether the software is better or whether it's freer or whether it's cheaper. It's to do with whether or not the managers who are purchasing that software are purchasing it according to their agency's budgets, guidelines and goals, as opposed to the government as a whole. And that is still a problem in New Zealand.
Right.
It has been since 1987.
We're not going, probably open source software of its own is not going to cause a reform in the New Zealand public management system. But what we have seen is setting up a centre of expertise in order to lead that. So we have got a focal point. What I'd like to just leave the group with before I hand over to Pia is the idea that a lot of these conversations have been taking place for 10, 15 years, and we haven't seen any changes in behaviour. If anything, we've seen an entrenchment of the way that people are buying. And maybe the time is come to use some of the tools that we've now got, the democratised tools, to actually start publishing and calling some of the behaviours that we see in government agencies. And rather like we put up, sorry, Nat and Glyn put up the open.org New Zealand website, and then 6 months later the government put up its own open data website. Maybe we can think about creating a public forum where examples about people not doing the right thing about procurement get published by the community. So with that, I'd like to wrap up this session and hand over to Pia, who's going to talk to us about something else.